Blog Talk Radio.
To the Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. That is very, very appropriate music, especially today. Today, we look back on the great wars of this century, and we honor our fallen heroes. I'm talking about our military personnel. Today is Memorial Day. Today is not just a three-day weekend. This is not just a day to barbecue, although that's part of it. This is a day specifically to honor, to recognize that our freedoms were blood-bought, first of all, by our Savior, Jesus Christ, but also our freedoms have been blood-bought by our military, our men and women, our fallen heroes that we dare not forget, that have died to protect our freedoms. And so today, if you're having a barbecue, a family gathering, and you have that extra day off from work, please don't forget our fallen heroes. That's today, Memorial Day 2016. Well, I hope you're going to have a great day. I know this past weekend was phenomenal. I had a very special book signing at Family Christian for my new book about Rahane. And, you know, sometimes in the bookstore when people are in there shopping for other things, they're distracted by that. They don't come over to the table. But the Lord really blessed this time together this weekend. I still ended up talking to people and engaging them first, but many of them were so riveted to a specific video interview I had on the table with Sholeh Pakravan, the mother of Rahane, being interviewed by Lisa Daftari of Fox News. They watched this interview on my tablet, and you could just see their face contorted, some of their faces white with shock, as they relived that moment with Sholeh when she talked to Lisa just 2 days after this execution and shared with her the feelings, the emotions of that most horrible day when her daughter Rahane was unjustly executed in Iran. I want to tell you, this has been a very, very special weekend. I was able to sell 6 books. 6 of them were copies of Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance. a copy of Across in the Desert, The Story of My Dear Iranian Friends, and Prisoner of Her Culture, The Story of Honor Killings in Pakistan. It was a very profitable weekend for many reasons, as I mentioned, but one of the most special reasons was my dear friends Miriam Rostampour and Marzeya Amirzadeh, the authors of the phenomenal best-selling Christian Captive in Iran. Miriam and Marzeya, on their timeline and on my page, began to promote my book for Rehana. And a lot of people, as a result of that, will purchase it. And I'm just thrilled because they are going to read Rehana's story to relive those horrible moments and to share their grief and pain with Sholeh and Rehana's family through reading this book. What a very, very special weekend to connect with my customers, to show this interview, and to have Miriam and Marzeya promote my book and tag it to their followers on Timeline and on Facebook. And I'm just thrilled and thankful to God for such a successful book signing weekend. Was able to hand out many prayer guides from Alam Ministry, Iran 30, which is so important that people pray for what's going on every day in Iran. I want to take just a couple of minutes to read some of the things, some kind words that those that have read my book have written up on Amazon as customer reviews. And this first one is from, I think her name is Ashley, and I always get these names mixed up sometimes, and she's from Australia. Her name is Allison Ashley, that's right. Allison, I'm so sorry. She writes, I just finished reading my Kindle copy, and all I can say is that it brought me to my very knees. Praise be to the Lord Almighty for this brave young woman, the courage she showed in giving her testimony, and her determination to stand up for the truth, even in the very shadow of death. I pray her story will reach out to many, and the legacy such courageous people as Rehana leave with us will endure in our hearts and minds for many, many years to come. Thank you, Allison Ashley from Australia, for supporting Rehana. And this comes from a dear friend named Hannah Brannick, who just yesterday was water baptized. Thank you for following Jesus and committing your life to him, Hannah. She writes, I highly recommend this book for anyone who enjoys reading true and relevant stories. Rehana's life has touched my life in a way that will never change. I will forever be impacted by her story. Reading this book was such a gift to me. I am so grateful to Randy for giving Rehana a voice, for telling the story of an evil regime that tried to silence her. This is absolutely a must read. Thank you. God bless you, dear Hannah. I'm so grateful to you for being a voice for Rehana. I want to read to you what my dear friends Miriam Rostampour and Marzeya Amirzadeh from their tremendous book, Captive in Iran. They are the authors. Here's what they had to say. So kind of them to promote my book. Dear friends, they write, we would like to bring to your attention that one of our dear friends, Randy L. Noble, has written and self-published a book about one of the women whom we met in prison, Rehana Jabari, who was in prison from 2007 until her execution by hanging in October 2014 for killing her alleged assailant. Although we have met Rehana at Evin Prison, but unfortunately we haven't had the chance to get to know her well because she was in a different ward. She seemed very strong, peaceful, kind, and supportive of other prisoners. We have shared parts of her heartbreaking story on our timelines before. Now that we realize that the whole story was written by Randy, we would like to encourage you to, in order to know who Rehana was and the sufferings that she and her family had endured because of the injustices and misogyny that rule the justice system in Iran. By spreading this painful story, we can show our support for women of Iran whose rights have been taken away from them by the Islamic Republic government of Iran. Thank you so much for supporting Rehana's story. Thank you so much, Miriam and Marzeya. It's such an honor to have your endorsement about a story that has absolutely riveted my attention and changed my life forever. Just want to say that I will continue to do interviews about Rehana, and in the next coming week, I will be on the radio, Radio Arava, It's Nargis Ghaffari, and she lives in Canada. Radio Arava is a Persian English radio station that is very dominant in Canada, and it'll be a pleasure to talk with Nargis and to talk about Rahane. And as soon as that interview becomes available, I will, of course, put it on my timeline. Speaking of Iran, this weekend, besides the book signing, was a very pivotal weekend for many human rights activists, Annie Siris, Kaveh Tahera. He's a human rights activist as a refugee living in Turkey. They created a Twitter storm for a lady named Shima Babeh. Shima Babeh is an Iranian civil rights activist, and just recently, in a raid conducted at her home on May 25th, they seized her personal belongings, her handwritings, her cell phones, simply because she spoke out against the government. Shima is only 21 years old, and she was taken to the notorious Ward 2A of Evin Prison, where in this ward, torture and rape is the 24-hour menu of the guards that are in that ward. In other words, they are busy torturing and raping political prisoners, and this puts Shima's life in great danger. They spent many hours on Twitter yesterday tweeting the phrase, "Free Shima." Now, we need to band together and continue this storm. Right here on my Facebook page, you will see several petitions for Shima Babeh. Shima Babeh. She's an Iranian civil rights activist, just 21 years old. She's an architectural student, and she is in Evin prison. Her life is in danger of being tortured and raped. So please come to my Facebook page. You'll see her picture. She is a beautiful young Iranian woman. Please, please take just a moment to sign the petition. Petitions make a difference. Trust me, they can mean life or death for these political prisoners. And so I urge you to go to my Facebook page. You'll see the petition to free Shima. Please, please be busy about doing that, because it can mean life or death for this young lady. So much goes on in Iran. I scarcely know how to talk about it. Just recently, 500 graduates, men and women having a party together in Iran, were arrested. They were publicly lashed 99 times for simply gathering together for a graduation party in Iran. Again, we are celebrating today on Memorial Day. We are dedicating this day to our fallen heroes who fight for our freedoms. We are free because God has blessed this nation, and because soldiers have given their lives in their stead to protect our freedoms. And think of that in light of my Iranian friends who have no freedom. They have no one to look to have died for their freedoms in that sense. And so we here can be a voice of hope and freedom for my Iranian friends who live in constant fear every day, who are oppressed every day by a radical Islamic government. And speaking of that, I want you to hear the latest story from my dear friend Paymane, an Iranian Christian refugee living in Malaysia. She just wrote this very thoughtful article today. It is about the mothers of Iran. Sholi Pakravan, Rahane's mother, is part of a group of mothers that stand together supporting each other for losing their children to the Islamic regime under execution. And they come together, they speak out, they pray together, they support each other. And she wanted to write something about this group who have lost their sons and daughters to execution. And I want you to hear what Paymane writes. She says, "In a motherhood meeting, Sholi Pakravan, Shahin Mihin, and some mothers, the mothers whose children were killed by the regime, expressed their concern about the young boys and girls who are released from prison on heavy bails. Now, all Iranian young boys and girls are the children of these mothers, and their issues are the issues of these mothers. They cry out when someone is executed, when someone is arrested, and their heart burns with the burning backs of those who are lashed. Of course, they are filled with joy when a young man or young girl is released, but their joy is only for a short time. The joy is overcome by worries. When a young man or woman is released, apart from the nightmares they still have, apart from physical problems and apart from other issues, they cannot have a job. Their background does not let them have a government job, although thousands of others without political backgrounds are unemployed too. On her Facebook page, Sholi writes about these people's disappointments. She writes that even don't know how long they will be free, and always there is the fear of them going back to the regime's dungeon. If a person starts a business, it takes many months to make a profit, and these people are not sure they will even be free next week. How can they predict what will happen a few months later? Maybe these people don't remember that the first conditions of getting licensed is being a Muslim and obeying the Islamic Republic of Iran. How can a political prisoner obtain a license? Moreover, who had dare contact these people without fear of consequences? Drawing forbidden cartoons, writing forbidden poetry, writing as a journalist, doing human rights activity, dancing is forbidden. Attending their own graduation party is forbidden. Being an independent physics scientist is forbidden. Having faith in Christ is forbidden. Thinking differently is forbidden. What can an educated, intelligent, thoughtful person do? Everything is forbidden in Iran. How if one of these released prisoners is married or has children? How can he provide a family with the basic necessities? Are these released young, talented people able to live a normal life after being released? Are they physically and mentally fit to have a normal, happy life? Writes Sholi, would Sattar be still able to support his mother with his crushed body and broken bones? If he was released, or would he have to stay home and count how many parts of his body are still painful and how many bones are broken? The regime is shedding the blood of those people for whom Christ thousands of years ago. The regime is imprisoning those whom Christ has paid for their freedom. This regime is getting the opportunity for salvation of those whom Christ has taken time to save their life. This regime hates those whom Christ loves unconditionally. The regime wants to rule instead of God and govern and oppress the country where Christ has promised to rebuild and restore. Christ will lift up Iran again, and one day that nation will be happy again. Thank you, Paymane, on pointing out how released prisoners have a very difficult road and have no hope of real freedom, no hope of economic support, and are only in fear of being imprisoned again. Thank you so much, dear Paymane, for informing us of what goes on behind the Iron Curtain of the Islamic Republic of Iran. What I want to do right now, I want to play this very powerful interview that Lisa Daftari of Fox News had with Sholi Pakravan, Rahane's mother, just 2 days after her execution. As you listen to this, I want you to think of my book signing, because the many customers who came to my table, their eyes were riveted on this interview, and their hearts literally melted when they heard Sholi and how she described her feelings about Rahane's execution. I want you to hear what made a difference in my book signing this past weekend.
The Iranian government executed 26-year-old Rehana Jabari over the weekend. Rehana was hanged for what authorities call premeditated murder, but what she and her family maintained was self-defense against the man who allegedly tried to rape her. After already serving 7 years in prison, her case garnered much international outcry, many believing there was foul play. Fox News did an exclusive interview with Sholi Pakravan, Rehana's mother, just a few weeks ago, who urged her daughter's supporters to speak out in an attempt to save her life. She now joins us only 48 hours after her daughter's execution. What was the last conversation you had with your daughter? What was her state of mind?
I went to see Rehana on Friday. It was with my husband, my other daughters, my parents, and my sister. Rehana comforted us, but she knew this was the end. She said there has been increased crackdowns and pressure on all the prisoners. She told us not to mourn her, not to be upset. It's so difficult, but I'm really trying to hold it together and to honor my daughter's wishes.
Had authorities given your daughter any warning? What had they told her?
They told her she had to go in front of his family to be pardoned and forgiven by them. They told her she had to confess that there was no intention of rape, and then maybe they would excuse you from execution. Then they brought in cameras into the room where sentences are carried out, and they kept pressuring her to confess that Zarbandi was not trying to rape her, and Rehana refused.
And you also went to the family to ask them to forgive your daughter, right?
We went to their family many times, begging them to forgive Rehana, but they didn't accept. But unfortunately, the day her execution was carried out, there were so many corrupt people there that they helped the Zarbandi family exit through a back door. Others tried to stop them, to ask them to forgive Rehana, to ask them to drop the charges, but they did it in a way so that we did not run into the family. We didn't have a chance to see them again.
الان دارین میرین ما رو ببخشید ولی ما از این مسئله هم محروم بودیم. خانواده سربندی رو ما اصلا روز اجرای حکم دیگه ندیدیم.
As difficult as it is, take us through the day of the execution, how you were notified, how the family was told that your daughter was killed.
On Friday, when we saw Rehana for the last time, they never told us which prison she would be taken to. We spent the entire night going from one prison to the next, till morning. We were shivering in the cold, both from the cold and from our nervousness. But I tell you, we still had hope. We had hope that Zarbandi's son, Jalal, would finally admit the truth and to pardon my daughter, or at least we were hoping the sentence would be postponed again. It was 7 a.m., and I was sitting in the car because I was so cold. And two of the women came to the car, and as they opened the door, they were crying. In that moment, my entire brain froze. I became paralyzed. Moments later, I just began screaming. I couldn't believe it. They killed my Rehana.
What did the authorities say to you at that point? Did they say anything to you or the family?
Absolutely nothing.
Rehana had so many supporters and advocates around the world. What's your message to those people?
I need your help. I am asking all the countries in the world who defend human rights and women's rights to investigate Rehana's case in international court. Maybe other courts can prove my daughter's innocence. The government's message to the women of Iran was that you cannot defend yourself in the face of rape or violence, or else you'll be executed.
Now I want to talk about the funeral. Were the proper dignities given to your daughter? Were you allowed to bury her in the way that you wanted?
مراسم خاکسپاری در ایران به این شکل که یک شستشو دارم در غسالخانه اون رو پنهانی انجام داده بودن.
In Iran, we have a custom of preparing the body in a certain way before the funeral. They had secretly done all of this without us. There was heavy security presence there. My husband and I, the rest of the family, we were told by security that we weren't allowed to touch or to get too close. They wanted to carry out the entire burial without us. We pushed our way to the front and begged them to allow us to participate in my daughter's burial. Of course, they didn't listen, and even the burial, our last chance to say goodbye, wasn't in our own hands. Right now in Iran, all of the media is reporting that this man did not intend to rape Rehana and that Rehana had every intention to murder him. I have no way of getting through to any courts here in Iran. In the same way that they killed my daughter, they will continue doing this to young people. They brainwash the people of Iran. They corrupt people's minds.
And I know Rehana left behind a very detailed will. How did she want to be remembered?
Today I cried so much. I was looking at pictures of Rehana. There is such a deep, deep pain in my heart. My beautiful daughter, she was beautiful in every way, a beautiful face, a kind heart. They killed her. What more can I say? She also told me that she believes in an afterlife. She told me not to worry, because in the next world, she would seek justice for the injustice she endured. From the judge, from the officials, from Sarbandi himself, those who tortured me in prison and did not spare me from my pain. My daughter forgave everyone that did this to her. She reminded me to forgive so you can grow, so that your heart can be at peace. Rehana had already forgiven all those who had tortured her. She said she would try to prove her innocence to them in the world to come, but in this lifetime, she had already forgiven them.
I thank you for speaking with us so shortly after receiving this awful news, and I wish you and your family comfort at this difficult time. Thank you for joining us.
Such a powerful interview, and this interview this past weekend at my book signing truly impacted my customers as they watched, as they listened to Sholeh describe this heartbreaking pain that no mother should have to ever experience. And notice at the end she talked about Rehana forgiving. This is why I called my book Rehana, A Beautiful Fragrance. She truly lived up to her name. Beautiful fragrance of mercy, of courage, and dignity. It's forever changed my life. What I want to do right now, before I begin the reading of my book, I want to share with you a very important petition update on Nazanin Ratcliffe, who is British-Iranian. She has been in prison now since, I think, the beginning of March, the end of March. And she's being held without really a cause. She's done nothing wrong, but of course you don't have to do anything in Iran. If you're a dual citizen, you're under the spotlight and the suspicion of the Iranian regime. And that's what Nazanin is. She's British-Iranian. She was in Iran to visit her family, that is her mother, when she was arrested. And she's been in prison ever since. But let me say to you, Richard Ratcliffe, her husband, and the group of men behind him have done an incredible job of awareness with their petition. It has over 700,000 signatures that is going right into David Cameron's office to be a voice demanding that Iran release her, his wife. I want to read to you. It's a little bit lengthy, but it's worth the read. It's day 56. This is Nazanin's husband, prisoner of Iran, and he writes, prison days. Let's listen to what Richard has to say in the latest update. I have some good news for your bank holiday. Yesterday, Nazanin found a way to call me. I won't explain how, since it was not formally authorized, but she found a way within the rules she was given. Their world has not ended. Nazanin was careful not to talk about her case or the subject of her interrogations and to show that it was okay for her to call. There was much I could not tell her, though I did let her know that many people are sending Gabriella birthday cards. Gabriella is, of course, her daughter. And it was so good to hear her voice. It felt like another small step forwards. But I had not quite expected her to be so sad, or for me to be afterwards, as I better understood what she is going through. The good news is that her physical strength, it's returning. It turns out that she has not been able to stand up when she has had the family visit, but had to see Gabriella sitting on a chair. She had not had the strength in her arms to lift her. There is still better than what parents are expecting. When she first came out of solitary, she used to have blackouts whenever she tried to walk. Now she's able to walk for 45 minutes every morning after the 6:30 a.m. inspection before the sun gets too high. She does not yet have the energy to join group supporting activities, but she does her yoga in the evening to keep up stretching, which looks a bit odd to the other prisoners. Her hair is no longer falling out. She is also better able to keep clean. Nazanin was always very particular on cleanliness. These days, our flat reflects her absence. The prison often has no hot water for 12 hours a day, but she is better able to shower, has access to shampoo. She still complains of how her skin looks. No perfumes are allowed there, but after 45 days, she has begun to shave. No razors were allowed in solitary, given the outcome. The food in the general cells, however, has gotten worse. Nazanin lost about 5 kg while in solitary, down to about 47 kg. This she has not yet recovered from. There was one hot meal a day, served with very dry rice. As any of you with Iranian friends will know, Iranians always notice the rice. She has not had any salad for over 2 months. The bread has a funny smell and taste due to the sedatives added to suppress the women's desires. The prison suddenly received some watermelon last week. In the end, her cell decided it wasn't drugged, and she had her first piece of fresh fruit in almost 60 days. And there is a prison shop where she can buy tea and biscuits. Now, her family has transferred money, and here she can occasionally buy alternative meals. There is also some kindness. There is a woman who works in the kitchen who looks out for her and occasionally shares spares from the menus. The highlight of her day, she said, is going to the mosque. Nazanin is not religious in an assertive ideological sense, but she is a quiet spiritual person. There is a solace in reading and praying and in being with people in a place where they can calm and reflect, being part of the journey to spirituality. Nazanin now is in the general cells of the women's wing of Kerman Central Prison, along with 400 other women inmates. There is a chance for friendships, for people to have a cup of tea with, and to hear their stories. Prisons in Iran are full of interesting people. She says it has been a real education what some have endured, and some of the prison guards, they're kind. Since she was moved, she has been visited by the prison inspector. But most of her life remains one of waiting. At this point, she would do anything if it meant she could get out to see Gabriella even 1 hour earlier. Nazanin was promised when moved it would be over within a couple of days. Now, for the first time, that particular promise has been made or proved hollow. She has not seen her interrogator since she was moved out of solitary. Perhaps that is a good sign. No one else in the prison is allowed to know what is happening in her case, not even the prison manager. So there is no one to ask. It remains a cruel business, and I remain grateful for your help in seeing us through it. That is Richard Ratcliffe, day 56, without seeing his daughter, without seeing his wife. Please remember Nazanin, Richard, Gabriella, her parents, in your thoughtful prayers. And please visit my Facebook page and sign the petition. And let's, with one voice, cry out to Iran to release this innocent woman and return her to her husband and daughter. This is a very special moment of the broadcast for me, and I thank you for waiting patiently. We are going to continue to read my book, Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance. And last time we left off, we were in Chapter 7. As they walked through the steel door into the corridor, another female guard joined them. Rahane had a guard on each side of her, hurrying her down the dark corridor. Within a few minutes, they had arrived at an elevator that took them to the ground. Rahane was panicking inside. She couldn't endure another day of torture. Her body was sore and exhausted, and her mind was at the edge, ready to completely shut down. Walking into a dark room with no carpeting, table, or chairs, Rahane stopped in her tracks, horrified by what she was seeing. Before her eyes was a young girl dangling from the ceiling by her handcuffed wrists. The girl appeared to be unconscious and was softly moaning out loud from the excruciating pain. The two guards departed from Rahane and left her alone in the center of the room with Officer Shamlou. Rahane couldn't take her gaze off of the young girl dangling from the ceiling. The girl's face was pale and her eyes were tightly shut. The haunting sound of her moaning sent shockwaves through Rahane's body. Officer Shamlou slowly approached Rahane and stared intently into her eyes. "How long do you think she will last like that?" Shamlou asked her with a devilish expression on his face. Rahane sat across the conference table from Officer Shamlou. She could barely look out of her eyes from being sleep-deprived, exhausted, and hungry. She was feeling absolutely hopeless. Officer Shamlou finished writing in his notes and then gazed sharply at Rahane. "Tomorrow, we will go get your little sister, Shahzad. It will then be her turn." Rahane's face became pale. Her eyes grew wide. She was horrified and going crazy on the inside. Shamlou was telling her they were going to do to Shahzad, done to the helpless girl dangling from the ceiling. Rahane recoiled in fear. The last image she had of Shahzad was back home on the night of her arrest. Rahane remembered how terrified Shahzad was by the officers, so much so that she hid underneath the covers of her bed. "No, no, not Shahzad," Rahane begged Shamlou. Shamlou leaned back in his chair for a moment and twirled his pencil between his fingers. Then he slammed his pencil down on the table and shoved a blank piece of paper in front of Rahane. "It's simple. Just write that you purchased the knife before the murder. Just write that you purchased the knife before the murder." Rahane's heart sunk within her. Another lie. Another forced confession. In her mind's eye, she could see the sweet and innocent face of her sister. She loved and adored Shahzad and would do anything in the world for her. She then gazed into Shamlou's eyes. She could see a glimpse of victory and triumph beaming out from his black, penetrating eyes. Rahane swallowed nervously. She understood that writing this false confession would forever seal her fate. Childhood memories and precious moments with Shahzad flashed across the screen of her mind. Rahane grabbed the pencil and reluctantly began writing. Shahzad was worth anything in the world to her. It was worth the very price of her life. Rahane knew what she had to do right now. Chapter 8. A Day in the Life at Evan. Rahane jumped up from a deep sleep, awakened by the blood-curdling screams of a woman. The other women in her tiny cell remained asleep, perhaps used to the atmosphere and commotions of prison life. The woman's distressing screams had traumatized Rahane. She desperately wanted to know what was happening. Wiping the sweat from off of her forehead, Rahane lay back down and tried to sleep. The screams had suddenly diminished. She quickly fell back asleep. The courtyard of Evan Prison was surrounded by a tall, thick concrete walls, lined on top with extremely sharp barbed wire. At the corner of the yard stood a guard post overlooking the perimeter of the courtyard. In the courtyard, Rouhani was able to look up at the sun and the blue sky, closest that she got to nature and outside life, where she could again breathe in the fresh air and feel alive again. In one section of the yard, Rouhani noticed women washing clothes, others playing with the ball, and one older woman standing up against the wall drinking tea. Kayabe had become a close friend with Rouhani. She was 25 years old, 6 years older, and was in prison for being a prostitute. She had engaged in illicit drugs and spent the last 4 years of her life suffering for her so-called depraved lifestyle. Wearing the hijab in prison was mandatory for all women. Tayabe wore a tight-fitting black hijab and a blue manteau that dropped across her chest to her knees. Tayabe was a talker. She loved to gossip and share stories about her life out on the streets. "Last night I was awakened by the screams of a woman," Rouhani explained. Tayabe snickered as if she knew the woman intimately. Rouhani soon discovered that Tayabe knew the story of every woman in Ward 209. Nothing escaped attention. "That was Zainab," Tayabe answered. She shook her head in disgust. "She has an infant son. No one can take care of it, so after she is executed, they will give her baby to the state." Rouhani shook her head in despair. "You see," Tayabe continued, "they wanted to take the baby now, and of course Zainab refused to give it to them. She was in the middle of breastfeeding her baby, so they decided to postpone her execution for a couple of weeks until her milk dried up." Rouhani covered her face with her hands. Tayabe patted her on the back to console her. "Eventually, you will get used to the horror and cruelty around here. Just pray you get numb and indifferent to the evil here. It's the only way you will survive." "Salam, mother." "Salam," Rouhani nervously said to her mother on the other end of the phone. Immediately, she broke out into tears after a simple hello. Sholi began to cry loudly on the other end of the phone, showing how much she loved Rouhani. The sound of her mother's voice brought tranquility to Rahane's soul. Then suddenly, someone tapped Rouhani on her shoulder. She turned around. Her time was up. A line of anxious women were also waiting impatiently to call their families. "Mom, I have to go," Rouhani anxiously explained, handing the phone to a young girl behind her. Rouhani took a deep breath and stared up at the clock on the wall. In just 2 hours, her father was going to visit her, and she couldn't wait to see his face once again. Even though Rouhani had been released from the coffin of solitary confinement, she still felt squeezed together with the other women, like cattle in a freight car. She shared a tiny cell with 14 other women that was cold and barely lit. She slept on the bottom bunk of a 3-tier bunk bed that stretched almost touching the ceiling. Without any books, newspapers, or computers, life in the tiny cell was almost intolerable, listening day and night to the complaints, the horror stories, and the injustices of other women. Rouhani longed for a real friendship, someone she could trust and confide in. During her time in solitary, she had befriended a young and compassionate woman named Fakte. But now, since she was released, she barely saw Fakte and missed their intimate times together. Tayabe was a good friend, but Rouhani didn't feel the warm compassion that she had with Fakte. Fakte had been by her side, consoling and listening to her when she was depressed and lonely. During the night when Rouhani was at her lowest and would wake up sweating in fear, Fakte was right there to dry off her forehead. She had become a close friend and companion. Rouhani had just finished eating and tolerating a cold bowl of rice and a half-baked potato when the cell door opened and a guard shoved Fakte into her cell. Rouhani dropped the rice bowl from her lap in shock and quickly threw her arms around Fakte. Her face looked pale as a ghost, and she was grabbing her stomach in pain and moaning. "Fakte!" Rouhani shouted with concern, helping her sit down on the edge of her bunk bed. Fakte managed to smile in the midst of her agony and gently kissed Rahane's forehead. "Mandalam baratang mishi," that is Farsi for "I have missed you so much," she said with tears in her eyes. "I have missed you so much too," Rouhani replied, hugging her once again. "What is wrong?" Fakte laid on her back across the bunk bed. They gave me permission to tell you goodbye before they hang me tomorrow morning. Rouhani gasped in fear. Tears filled her eyes. No, no. She reached down and began massaging Fakte's forehead with the palm of her hand. Fakte looked up at Rouhani with a sarcastic grin on her face. They just flogged me, gave me 50 lashes. Rouhani put her hands over her mouth in horror. Flogged you? Fakte smiled and then chuckled. Yeah, I guess they wanted me to feel the pain now as if the noose would not be enough. The thought of saying goodbye to her best friend was too much for Rouhani to bear. She laid down next to her best friend on the bunk bed and put her arms around her. Dustat Daram, Farsi for I love you, Rouhani whispered softly into her ear. Fakte put her face up against Rahane's shoulder and burst into tears. Rouhani and Fakte spent their last hour together in each other's arms without saying a word. Rouhani awoke depressed the next morning. Shortly after their visit last night, two guards had come to take Fakte to solitary, which is customary before an execution. Today, Rouhani was immersed in tears. Fakte was dead. She had been executed at dawn. Her best friend had been cruelly snatched away from her life by an evil regime that hated women. Today was both sad and bittersweet. Rouhani's family was coming to visit her. She was thrilled to see them, but felt a dark cloud of anger and depression wrapping itself around her. Through calendar and newspaper clippings posted on the ceiling above her bunk, the latest news in Iran. She couldn't believe it, but it was already 7 months since she had last seen the outside world. She missed her home, her parents, her job at the advertising agency, and most of all, the quiet, relaxing walks in the park near her home. Just to breathe again, to taste life, to feel the soft breeze against her face, Rouhani longed for the freedom to be alive, the freedom to enjoy living again. Today was February 11, 2008. She had been in prison for over 7 months, and now she would face the most terrifying challenge of her life by standing trial for the murder of Morteza Sorbande. Rouhani Jabari, Rouhani sat up on her bunk bed. Her name had just been called over the loudspeaker. Within a few moments, two female guards snatched her from her cell and escorted her through the main lobby, putting her inside an official car that would take her to Cabin 36. Cabin 36 was the location for family visitations. There were glass cabins with handheld phones and green curtains. Prisoners would sit at a table facing a glass partition and talk on the phone to their family members. Today, Rouhani had 20 minutes of visitation time. Slowly, the curtain lifted up, and she saw her two sisters standing behind the glass partition. Their faces were red from crying. Sholi and Feridun were both seated on chairs behind the partition. Rouhani could feel the guards standing close behind her, listening to every word that she spoke. Sholi brushed back her blondish gray hair and began to speak into the phone. "How are you, Rehan?" Tears began streaming down her face. Sholi struggled to control her emotions. "Are they treating you good? How is your food?" "Everything is fine, Mom. I'm okay." Rouhani looked over her mother's shoulders and watched Shahrzad shaking with fear, with tears in her eyes. Rouhani nervously swallowed. She desperately wanted to climb over the glass partition and hug her little sister. Sholi handed the phone to her husband. Feridun brushed back his thick black hair and composed himself. "Rehan, we all miss you. We love you. You look good. How do you feel?" Rehana smiled and blew a kiss toward her father. She pressed the palm of her right hand firmly against the glass. Feridun responded by pressing his palm against the glass partition right on top of Rehana's palm from the other side. A single tear streamed down Rehana's face. She desperately desired to touch her father's hand through the glass. Rehana cleared her throat. "Daddy, I love you. I miss you." Feridun's face melted into despair. He took a deep breath and closed his eyes. Then he slowly opened them back up, giving Rouhani a serious look. "Rouhani, did you really stab that man? Why did you do that?" Feridun's question took Rouhani by surprise. The mood of their visit suddenly changed. Rouhani felt as though it had become another stressful interrogation. A look of, "He tried to rape me, Daddy. That's why." A look of rage and fierce anger filled Feridun's eyes. He took an angry deep breath. "That bastard." Sholi quickly grabbed the phone away from her husband to change the mood of the visit. "Don't worry, Rouhani. We will get you a lawyer. Don't worry." Could feel one of the guards grab onto her shoulder. "Time is up," he abruptly stated. The green curtain was quickly lowered, and the brief visit was over. Rouhani hung up her phone as two guards lifted her up from the chair. It was now time to return to her steel coffin existence, along with the other women who were waiting with her to die. Rouhani sat on the floor of the corridor, facing the cracked green-colored wall. She was frustrated, angry, and out of patience. Earlier this morning, she had been abruptly awakened and driven to the Vizarro Detention Center again for another long interrogation. Shamlou loved to engage in psychological tactics in order to punish and torment Rouhani. Today, he had forced her to sit alone in the cold corridor of Shapur headquarters and face the wall for hours without food, water, and using the toilet. The waiting was agonizing. Rouhani guessed it had been almost 3 hours since she arrived. There was no clock on the wall. The floor beneath her was hard and cold. Rouhani desperately wanted to lean her back up against the wall and sit. The muscles of her body were extremely sore from prolonged sitting. As she began to close her eyes from boredom and weariness, suddenly a tall man approached her from behind. Rouhani tried to stretch her neck back and turn her head up to look. The man remained strangely quiet, towering above her. Rouhani could hear a tingling noise, like the sound of a teaspoon clanging against a coffee cup. Struggling to get in the right position, she moved her body away from the wall in order to look up at the tall man. Bending her neck, Rouhani peered up at the tall man and noticed that he was holding a flask of hot tea in his hand. He had a sinister look in his black eyes as he positioned the spout of the tea flask directly over Rahane's head. What are you doing? Rouhani nervously blurted out. The tall man slowly turned the flask toward her head and allowed a few drops of hot tea to drip down on her black hijab. Rouhani screamed in pain as she felt the hot drops penetrate down through the hijab and land on top of her hair. The tall man burst into laughter as Rouhani shielded her head with her hands. Looking up, an open door interrupted the man's cruel prank. He backed away as Officer Shamlou instructed Rouhani to get up off of the floor. Rahane's wrists were throbbing from the pain of being handcuffed. The female guard lifted Rouhani off of the floor and escorted her down the hall to a waiting car outside. Rouhani eagerly gazed out of the car window, watching people walking down the streets and passing outdoor cafes, and stores along the way. Seeing the outside world brought tears to her eyes. She longed to be free once again, to walk down the streets, sit at the cafe, and enjoy ice cream cones. The car came to a screeching halt in front of the cutlery store. Rouhani was escorted into the store by a female guard to the front desk. A young man with a black beard and glasses, wearing a purple apron, arrived at the desk. "May I help you?" Shamlou introduced himself and his female assistant and then pointed towards Rouhani. "Have you ever seen this woman before?" The young man carefully studied Rahane's face for a few moments and shook his head. "No, sir, I don't." Shamlou gave the man a frustrated look. "Do you sell Swiss knives?" he inquired. Shamlou pulled out a knife from his pocket. The young man took the knife from Shamlou and carefully studied it. Then he shook his head once again. I don't sell that type of knife." Shamlou took the knife back from the young man. "Thank you for your time." The female guard took a hold of Rahane's shoulder and escorted her out of the store. As Rouhani sat quietly in the back of the car, she bowed her head in despair. Shamlou was determined to frame her for the murder of Dr. Sorbandi. After securing a forced confession from Rahane under brutal torture, the next step was to find someone to identify her purchasing the knife that killed Dr. Sorbandi. Rouhani was gripped with hopelessness and fear. She realized that soon her trial would begin and her fate would then be sealed forever. A tight noose was awaiting her, and Rouhani could almost feel the rope tightening around her neck and suffocating her life. Tabaladat Mubarak, Farsi for happy birthday, a chorus of cheerful voices shouted as Shalah walked toward Rouhani carrying a huge chocolate cake in an aluminum pan. Tonight was a very special celebration in War 209. They had secured permission from the prison guard to have a loud party until midnight. Tonight, November 6, 2008, was Rouhani's 21st birthday, and she was in a great mood, ready to celebrate until the stroke of midnight. Earlier in the day, Rouhani's grandparents, Anat Nafis, had obtained permission to join her for a celebration. Her father, Feridun, had surprised her with a beautiful gold pendant with a picture of a scale on it. Feridun placed the pendant around his daughter's neck and kissed her on the forehead, reminding her that the gold scale was a symbol of justice. Allah will give you justice. You will soon be home, Feridun said with a reassuring voice. Rouhani's cheeks were red from blushing. She loved her cellmates and respected them so much. Most of them had spent years out on the streets, downtrodden and homeless, and now tonight they had sacrificed their personal monies to bless Rouhani with a special gift for her birthday. Rouhani had received phone cards, hair bands, stocking hats, hand-woven sweaters, and homemade bags. She was both humbled and overjoyed at the wonderful presents her cellmates had given her. All throughout the night, there was dancing, endless laughter, and joy. The tiny ward had been transformed into one giant party. After 10 p.m., the partygoers used pots, pans, and anything that would make loud noise to sing, dance, and celebrate until midnight. Finally, the celebration came to an end, and exhausted, Rouhani laid down across her bunk bed and took a long, deep breath. Tonight had been the second year she had celebrated her birthday in prison. Rouhani closed her eyes and visualized her childhood days, blowing out all the candles on her birthday cake with her two sisters and mother laughing and joking at her. Tears began to stream down her face. In just a month, her trial would officially begin. December 13, 2008 was the date fixed on the calendar for the beginning of her court proceedings. Rouhani reached under her bed and grabbed a tiny stuffed doll that her grandmother had given her for her birthday. She hugged the stuffed doll tightly against her chest and silently prayed. Then she reached around her neck and gazed at the gold pendant her father had given her. The tiny scales glistened in the dim light of the cell as she held it close to her face. Rouhani closed her eyes and whispered a short prayer that Allah would speedily give her justice and freedom so that on her next birthday she would be home with her family once again. And thus ends the reading of my book, Rouhani, A Beautiful Fragrance. We have just finished Chapter 8. And join me next time when we continue reading Rouhani, A Beautiful Fragrance. God bless you. See you on Thursday.